My man.
What's up, brother?
It's good to see you.
Always, always good to see you, my brother.
We are here for anyone listening. Daniel Achampan, co-founder and GP at Visible Hands. If you don't know Visible Hands, you're sitting under a rock. That's some, I need you to know that. Very, very inspired by what you've built. Very excited to share your vision and some of the things that you're working on with all of our listeners. But I really appreciate you being here, man. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, man. It's so good to see you, brother. I mean, you and the team at Collide are just amazing. Huge fans. We love you guys. And also for folks who are listening to the road on travel, I mean, you are in excellent hands with, the phenomenal Brian Hollins, who's a dear friend and just a remarkable individual.
I appreciate you, man. I think it's important for you to get to tell your own story. So you get 2 minutes, go any direction, start wherever you want. Would love to just give people a little bit of background on who you are.
Yeah, for sure. I always love to start with Ghana. I was born in Ghana and I came to the US as a kid. And for me, I'll say the first entrepreneurial journey that I saw was my dad. My dad was a carpenter in Ghana, and he took this step to leave Ghana to come to the US. And I was having a conversation with him the other day, and I was like, "Dad, why did you take this journey? You had your family, you had everything, going well for you there." And his answer to me was that so that my kids could get a better education. And for me, it was humbling to see at the time he was in his, late 20s to take that risk. And if somebody were to come to me right now and say, "Hey, Daniel, you're in your, I'm 33, like, I want you to leave everything, go to a country that you don't really know anyone, you don't have any money, to start new." I'll be like, hell no. So that entrepreneurial journey for my dad was just incredible to see. And that has been inspiring from my parents. I went to Brandeis undergrad. It was at Brandeis that I met one of my co-founders, Justin. He and I have been really good friends over the years, worked on several projects together. And then from Brandeis, I worked at Goldman Sachs in an asset management practice, time working with the team then, and was later recruited to Summit Partners. Summit's a growth equity firm based out in Boston. And at my time at Summit was really also my first time to see how significant pools of capital could be invested in entrepreneurs. And just the team there was just exceptional at what they did. So I learned a lot there. And I remember just taking a step back, looking at the venture and just generally the investment ecosystem. I looked at the dollars that were going to people and I said, "All right, this is a lot of money that's being invested across the board in finance. Where's this money going?" And I realized that majority of that money, 90, over 90% of that money goes to men and mostly white men. So I was like, "Wait, that doesn't make sense. If women and racial minorities make up about 70% of the US population, it doesn't make any sense that they're receiving less than 10% of invested dollars." And for me, it was also personal. I have three sisters, three black sisters. They are smart. I think they work harder than me. They're smarter than me. They're just incredible. And I was like, "Wait, statistically, if they were to go out and build companies, the chances of them being successful becomes significantly diminished because of their gender and their color." And that just doesn't make any sense. So I wanted to do something about it.
And we're going to jump into what you are doing about it because you're doing a lot about it. But I want to zoom back a little bit, like talk about, I also started my career at Goldman Sachs. And so Goldman does not develop your entrepreneurial bug, in my opinion. It teaches you that you should get in line and you should walk up the ladder and we'll pay you well and you'll learn a lot and you'll be surrounded by incredibly smart people, but it doesn't teach you that you should go outside the lanes or color outside the lines or whatever you want to call it. Where did you build? I'd argue insight doesn't do that either. And so you now decided to jump off the boat and get in a canoe, get in a speedboat, whatever you want to call it. You got into a smaller vessel, which is an entrepreneurial journey. Like, what do you think lit that fire in you to want to make that jump?
I think to Goldman for me at the time was an incredible place to learn about the world, the finance world. So a lot of exposure. And also our clients, the investors that clients that we worked with were mostly entrepreneurs. So for me to be in a meeting with them, right, to ask them questions about how did you build this company? How did you go from $0 to have exited the company at, several hundreds of million dollars to, be where you are. So that inspired conversations. But to another point to the question, Brian, is the idea of taking that jump. I remember I did my graduate degree at Wharton for my MBA and Harvard for policy. And one of my Wharton classes, it was an entrepreneurship class. And this professor at the end of the semester, he gives this long, passionate speech. And in this speech, he talks about, all the things that you could do, the value you can create as an entrepreneur. And at the end, he says, you all going through these institutions or coming from these corporations, you all make up 0.08% of people in the world who can actually take a risk. And then he pauses and then does this long walk from one end of the class to the other end. And then he looks back at the class and he says, but I bet most of you will not even try. And for me, that just hit me like, man, even if I fail in taking a risk, the cushion is pretty high. So why not take the chance and go build something?
I want to get your perspective on you could have built a bunch of different things. And so what led you to become a venture capitalist? What sort of motivated you to invest in black-owned businesses? Like what led you down this entrepreneurial path in particular?
I think being at a place like Summit was an incredible training ground to see how you can really invest in people's goals and your dreams and the vision, but also putting together infrastructure and frameworks around it to support them to do it well. So for me, what led me to think about it in this context with my partners was that number one, we identified a problem. And when we saw that problem, we said, it's the thing about founders not receiving capital, diverse founders not receiving capital, it's a really, really important problem that have catalytic impact across generation. So then we said, how do we do something about it and be specific in our approach? So we looked at the venture spectrum and we said it would be hard to just pluck somebody from the street and then put that person at, the growth equity stage or the private equity stage, right? So we said, then where do we come in within the spectrum and have that meaningful change? And we believe you can start that at the top of the funnel. If you expand that funnel, you bring quality entrepreneurs, diverse entrepreneurs there, you really begin to change everything else throughout the whole value chain. So we built out Visible Hands to challenge that top of the funnel. So for example, when we first went out to market, Brian, we said, look, we have this venture firm, we have an accelerator connected to it. We're going to leverage an accelerator as our primary sourcing engine. So we want to go out and have 500 people apply to our first cohort. We received close to 1,000 applicants. So immediately for us, we were like, this pipeline is amazing. And we chose to first cohort work with 45 companies. And it was so difficult to choose because just even the companies, the entrepreneurs were incredible. So, expanding that top of the funnel began to really have incredible value throughout this whole chain.
Yeah, I love that, man. Talk about how you see the landscape evolving for Black entrepreneurs. Like, I think what you're describing is true, which is there's more places to start than there were 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago. I would argue, on the top-down perspective of that, there's still a lack of Black entrepreneurs that lift up and out through a Series B, through a Series C, to an IPO. Like, what over the next 5 to 15 years do you think needs to change in order for more of that to happen? In order for more of yes, there's more people in the top of the funnel now, but how do you get more people through the middle into the bottom of the funnel?
That is spot on. Like, how do we get more people through that cycle? That is so spot on, Brian. And I think part of it is it often still comes down to dollars. For someone to get to, from the C to Series A, from the A to the B, and the B to whatever, to growth and private equity, it still comes down to dollars. And part of that, the connection to the dollars is the networks, and ensuring that the network of founders are expansive enough and also quality and rich enough. But then really the dollars become part of it, right? Having conversations, and you and I both run funds, and thinking about going out to raise capital for the, I'll say, the gatekeepers, the pension funds, the fund of funds and stuff. There, we need to change the people, or ensure that there's change happening across the boards and the decision makers at these places. And I was the other day, one of my friends got a letter from one of the pension funds that they're associated with, and it was to decide who's going to be on the board. And that person almost threw out that letter. And I was like, wait, you have no idea the power of deciding who's going to be on that board is, right? So it starts really also at home, ensuring that our family members, our parents, our grandparents understand that the decision from the capital that we talk about, it starts pretty close, and ensuring that there's also that level of education. But it's we got to follow the money.
That's well said. Talk about a little bit about what you've learned about yourself as a leader now, kind of being at the helm of a ship instead of being, employee number AB77462. Like, what have you seen or learned about yourself? Where are your areas of development still?
I took a class at the Kennedy School at Harvard that really had, I think, played a, it was a really important class to help me think about my evolution as a leader. And typically we think about leadership as, people, someone is born as a leader, that you have these traits. But over time, I've come to learn that leadership is an activity. It's the person who's doing the work, right? Doing the work to mobilize, to execute, and to really ensure that things are getting done, that the follow through. So then leadership becomes the activity. So the evolution for me has, has been important to understand that, understanding, say, hey, these are the areas that I'm really good at, and these are the areas that I'm not good at. And if I can't do this activity, how can I bring on people, other leaders, to help push that further along? So in the composition of our team with Visible Hands, with me and my co-founders, I mean, Yasmin is phenomenal as a thinker, as a strategist, as an investor, and also building core and key relationships with, with LPs. And then Justin is also phenomenal at thinking about this, the specificities of building companies from 0 to 0.1 to 0.2 to all the way to getting to one. And by bringing those individuals around me from my perspective and my background in finance and thinking about diligence, making investments in companies, and we've built a really strong executive and leadership team to guide the vision of Visible Hands. But my evolution has evolved in understanding that leadership is an activity, and bringing people along with you to help get those things done.
Talk about your relationship with Yaz, how you've learned to sort of coexist, have a co-founder, what a co-founder means, maybe any advice you have for others that are thinking about finding a co-founder. What are the exercises you'd suggest they go through?
It's, I think, cool when you're building any company and bringing a team along, it's a really personal thing, because the company itself that you're building is it you're putting everything in it, it's your baby, so it becomes very personal. So for Visible Hands, the early stages started with me and Justin and a few other people starting to think about the foundations of it. And then Yasmin came along. Yasmin and Justin had a long time friendship. They worked together before in other capacities. And when I met Yasmin, I was like, man, this guy, this, this girl and that Justin has introduced me to is smart. She is thoughtful. She challenges us, and she takes no bullshit, right? So by really pushing us to become better as partners, as teammates, I was something that I felt very appealing. It was very appealing. So my advice is find someone who challenges you, and but also someone who is deeply thoughtful, cares about the vision of what you're trying to accomplish, and that you know that you can spend, 24 hours with them to get things done.
What advice do you have for founders right now? So I'm not even going to say on fundraising, on product, on, just let's just do 30,000 feet. Like, if you're a founder that's never built a company before, even fathoming that is pretty insane, given the leaders in our industry didn't know how to fathom it. What is just your advice, pure advice for, it doesn't need to be underrepresented entrepreneurs, just people that are building right now?
I mean, I think it's spot on, Brian. Like, we are living in unprecedented time in history, things that we haven't seen in half a century, and in some cases in a century. Like the rate of interest rates and inflation, we haven't seen that in about 50, 40 years or so. With the Silicon Valley Bank just, almost imploding in a matter of 48 hours. It's a really scary thing. And we had entrepreneurs who are in that. I think this period will go down in history as the especially for founders and builders in this period, will go down in history as a generation of some of the most resilient builders that we have ever seen. Right, to go through COVID, to go through these economic challenges, to still build and figure it out and say, I'm going to keep doing it, keep doing it anyway. So my advice to founders is persevere and just keep pushing, keep fighting. And also use this as an opportunity to learn that why are all these things, these situations happening in the context of the macro and also micro? And what are the lessons that I can pull from this to become a better operator, a better investor, a better builder? So really leveraging this as an incredible learning experience. Like, we haven't seen this before. So let's be students of this, but you got to persevere.
Talk a little bit about the other side of the table. So, advice for fund managers. You've now experienced raising capital as an emerging manager. Do you have any different advice or anything in particular that you'd share with folks that might be navigating that journey for the first time?
Yeah, I think part of you're going to, as a fund manager on the fundraising side, there's the fundraising side, there's the fund management side, there's the investment side, there's the operating side. Regardless of
Which, by the
any of
way, I
that,
don't think gets talked about enough, but there are
man,
multiple components to being a fund manager that nobody talks about.
yeah,
Nobody talks
I we
about.
can, yeah, we can spend hours and hours on each component of
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
because each component of that is a full-time job in itself.
Yeah. I like to say that everyone wants a fund until they get one.
That is true.
Be careful what you wish for.
That is true. Yeah, it's a lot of operational stuff. My advice, and yeah, what I would tell Daniel 2 years ago is that you're going to hear a lot of no's on this journey, and just keep fighting, just keep plugging away. And I actually began to have a different perspective towards, towards that. Is that I used to take the no's personal. Like, man, they don't believe in what we're doing. They don't like me. They don't do this, X, Y, Z. Then I began to realize that, truly every no is an opportunity, every no is an opportunity to learn and refine. And then also every no is a step closer to a yes. But it doesn't mean that as you get closer to the yes, the no's get any better.
It feels good.
It doesn't
They
feel
hurt
good.
the
It still
same.
sucks.
Yeah, they hurt the
They hurt
same.
the same. Every no hurts the same. It still sucks. But you just got to keep fighting. It's if you believe in what you're trying to accomplish. You know, for us, we are so passionate about what we're doing at Visible Hands that we believe that there are great founders all around us. And we have to make sure that we're seeing them and giving them the opportunity to build their businesses. So, you know, the no's will come. And then also as investors, we have to give out a lot of no's. So you develop empathy to see the pain that a founder goes through when they hear 10 no's in a row, you know, or 20 no's in a row. So, you know, it for me is mainly empathetic in how I deliver, but also ensuring that if we say no, we actually have reasons and things to back it up to show like this is how we thought about it. So I think it's actually made me a better investor, even though sometimes a hard pain to swallow when you're going through that, you know, those no's.
I want to leave a little bit of space to cover anything on just advice, general advice that I might not have given you the space to share. I think you're a super insightful dude, and you know, we have a variety of listeners, call it 18 to 35-year-olds trying to work on themselves in some capacity. Any advice that you'd share, given the pretty impressive journey that you've been on?
You know, thanks for that question. I mean, a couple of things that come to mind. The first one was when I was in my early 20s and my time at Goldman had ended, I was trying to figure out what the next thing I wanted to do was. And I went to one of my managers and I was like, hey, you know, my time is ending here and I don't know exactly what I want to do next. You know, what kind of job should I be thinking of? And this mentor gave me really thoughtful advice that I still use as a guiding principle for me. And she said, Daniel, don't focus on what the next job is, but focus on who you want to become as a person, as a man, and everything else will fall into place. And I spent a lot of time reflecting on that. And I wrote in my journal and kind of really try to iron all what that meant. And it took about 6 months. And I've used that, Brian, as a guiding principle of every decision that I'm taking, especially as it relates to my career. I ask myself, does it make me a better person? Does it make me a better man or a better friend? And all these other things. And if it does not, it's a pretty quick no. So then it takes away this thing of, is it paying me more money? You know, or is it giving me all these XY bells and whistles? For me, is that, is it making me truly a better person? And that's how has been a guiding principle for that. And then the last thing is freedom. I think about, I think freedom is really critical in ensuring that I have intellectual freedom to try to learn as much as I can and stay curious, physical freedom, take care of my body, stay healthy, spiritual freedom, go on my knees, physically go on my knees every morning and I say thank you. And then relational freedom, which I'm, you know, trying to do a better job of ensuring that keeping in touch and maintaining my core relationships.
I love those, man. I appreciate you being here. Daniel Achampong, co-founder GP of Visible Hands. It's been a pleasure, man. I really appreciate you sharing everything.
My brother, always good to see you, man. And thank you for having me. And it's great always to be on this platform. The road
Let's
untraveled.
get it.
Love it.
Thank
Let's
you,
get it,
brother.
brother.
That's it for this episode of The Road Untraveled. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're interested in learning more, please check us out at theroaduntraveled.io. You can follow me on Twitter at bhalls1, and you can follow The Road Untraveled on Twitter at VC Perspectives. My one ask to you is to share this with someone that you think might enjoy the episode or any of the episodes that we've had. We've really enjoyed building this community and hope to continue building going forward. Hope to see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening.